Welcome to another episode of Skip IntelliCast, a podcast about strategy, intelligence, and leadership. I'm Cam Mackey. Market and competitive intelligence professionals spend much of their time on the external landscape, tracking technology and customer trends, or looking for early warning signs of potential disruption. But there's enormously valuable data within our own four walls, hiding in systems like our CRMs and ERPs. Competitive intelligence brings a unique set of analytical skills that can find hidden growth opportunities in this data, often overlooked by others. We're excited to talk with Randy Brown, a senior executive with over 30 years' experience as a chief marketing officer, division president, and strategy executive from leading industrial businesses. Randy is currently chief marketing officer for Chief Outsiders.
Well, great. Randy, I'd like to ask you the first question. So you've got a great background in, you know, leading P&Ls, running marketing, sales, strategy, business development. So just would love your perspective on how companies actually, you know, set strategy in those contexts. So, you know, my impression is that when you're, you know, setting or even tweaking strategy, companies often look, you know, outside their four walls, whether it's, you know, macroeconomic data or, you know, customer trends, et cetera. So what are some of the pros and cons of, you know, relying so heavily on external data for strategy and other areas?
Yeah, great question, Cam. Great to be here. So, you know, you and I've worked together quite a few years, and you know my focus on process, even as a marketing and P&L executive. And, you know, we've done a lot of work over the years around insights and leveraging insights to develop strategy, you know, to formulate strategic hypotheses and leverage those from the insights to develop growth strategy and then finally drive that into execution. So when I think about the insights, you know, front end strategic piece of the gear, there's really two critical components of assessment, you know, that can take place there. So obviously, there's the market base, which is extremely critical, where you're looking at the competition and customers and market segments in the market. But, you know, one of the ones that really many times gets a little bit forgotten about is all of the intelligence and insights that are possible to be extracted from internal transaction analysis. And there's just a treasure trove of a gold mine in companies' transactions.
Maybe talk a little bit more about that. So do you think that companies have this, you know, maybe bias, if you will, towards external data just because, oh, that internal transactional data is someone else's problem? What do you kind of root cause in that? What do you think the reason a lot under leverage the transactional data?
Well, one of the things I would say for sure is from an external based standpoint, and, you know, I'm a huge proponent of market based, you know, business, right? Mm, so yeah. I mean, everything's driven and led by what the market dynamics are. So you absolutely have to start with the market. But I will say, and many of my colleagues and people, especially in the industrials, know that in lots of cases, there are not easy reports to go get that actually, you know, report on what's going on in the market to give you competitive intelligence. So one of the little tricks that I've used over the years to triangulate along with external competitive assessment, market assessment activities is what I call just internal transaction data mining. Hmm. And so there's a few tools, maybe three or four tools that I've used that I'd like to share that are really give huge insights into the business. And what's cool about them is now they're internal based. So you always have to triangulate that right against the external market factors. But because they're internally based and they're in your transaction intel, they're fact-based. I mean, they're actually what's going on in your business as, you know, illustrated by your transactions. But lots of times, you know, especially marketing teams aren't really up to date on what those key tools are. So I'll give a few examples. One, this is kind of a neat story. Really early in my career, very early on, I went to a series of seminars And there was a gentleman there named Donald Libby. He's since passed, but he wrote the book on RFM many, many years ago. And he, to the audience, he gave this whole story about the tradesmen pushing the cart in the old days through the neighborhood. And as he did that over the years, he learned everything there was to know about what the customers bought, what kind of food they liked, what kind of extra items they added on. And there was this just great story. And then he transitioned into when with the new technology and how you can analyze stuff, there's tremendous insights you can get with technology. So he introduced me many years ago to RFM, which is recency frequency monetary value analysis. It's very widely used in consumer segments, but it's not used very often in the industrial sector. And what it simply does is it measures how recently a customer has transacted with you, how frequently they're transacting with you when they do order, and what's the monetary value of the orders over, you know, any selected duration. And so what it allows for you to do is, and especially in companies that have lots of products, lots of customers, serve lots of geographies, you can run the RFM right out of your database of customers and value your customers. Ones that are really high value, they're ordering very recently, they're ordering very frequently when they order, and the monetary value is really high. That's a great customer. That's a customer you want to make sure that you're, you know, really taking care of and paying a lot of attention to. There's other customers that maybe have only ordered once. So they're like, they're your new customers coming in, right? And you also need to pay a lot of attention to them. And then you have everything in between. And so I won't go into the detail now. We could do that, you know, on a different session, but there's a scoring index where you can take R, F, and M, score it into quartiles, and actually plot them out to show you the whole range of your current customer portfolio. And it's just eye-opening. It's amazing when you take a little bit of time, you know, to do that.
Well, I like that, because I think one of the struggles that a lot of, you know, market and competitive intelligence professionals feel is that with external data, a lot of it's unstructured, right? And so it can be, you know, very hard to, pardon the phrase, you know, compare apples to apples. And so, you know, what you're talking about here, you know, Randy, with RFM, is you're using your own, you know, generally CRM data, which if it's not structured in the right way, you know, kind of, you know, blame yourself, right? So you can probably do some of these analysis in a rich way. Maybe a follow-up on RFM. Can you look at that score analysis and how that changes over time? So in other words, you know, hey, key account A went from great to a little bit, you know, lower. Maybe we should give some more attention. Is that kind of thing possible?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You can run that every month. You can run it every quarter or annually as a part of your strat planning process. The other thing I wanted to mention is, you know, the other thing that we find, especially industrials, is lots of times existing customers that are being sold to are still pretty underserved. There's still a lot of white space in them. So the several of these tools that I'm going to share today that are looking at current customer transaction intel, it also uncovers white space and additional growth opportunities with customers that already know you. And as we know, that's where it's easiest to get business the quickest, right? So I'm a big proponent of, you know, while we're looking at, you know, adjacencies or new customers, let's also spend a lot of time understanding where we're underserving current customers. And I'm sure, you know, lots of those listening probably are familiar with the Ansoff matrix, right? So, you know, this is about targeting targeting current customers with current products. That's the easiest place to go get business the quickest, right? Because they already know us. And then you've got the other piece of that quadrant that's current customers, but new products. That's the second easiest place to get it. So, right. And it goes all the way, right, to new customers, new products, where that's tougher to get. So this is all in alignment with going and getting more deeper market penetration in existing accounts, right? So that's the RFM tool. So I'd like to share another tool. This is one, right, that I call the growth profitability or growth margin matrix. And this is also a simple one. Simply, when I come into any new organization, the very first thing that I do is I try to get 3, 4, 5 years of sales and margin information, right, from their database, because that allows for you to smooth it a little bit and do CAGR instead of just, you know, a single year over year growth. Yep. Especially, I mean, everyone can imagine if you included 2020 and there was COVID, that would be a big anomaly.
Right? Messy, so, right?
Yeah. So I'm even doing some now where I just take 2020 out. I've done the prior 3 years just to, because that would have been pretty typical, right? Yep. And simply all we do is we run what's the three-year CAGR and the gross margin by all the product families in the portfolio, right? Mm-hmm. I start there, just top level product portfolio view. And what it tells me immediately by the bubble size, where it's at on the CAGR piece of the grid and the margin piece of the grid, how strong that product's performing in the portfolio. It's almost like if you're looking at your investment, your 401k or your investment, you want to see how your funds are performing, right? Mm-hmm. This shows you in an immediate snapshot how your product portfolio is performing, what the biggest ones are that are contributing to growth and margin, and also the inverse, the ones that are not growing and that are poor margin. And that gives that creates all sorts of strategic hypotheses, right? Why is this one growing and it's so big? And why is this one not, and everything in between? And so you can imagine just that very simple CAGR and gross margin view. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to list off a few things. It's really simple. Start with your product portfolio at the total consolidated level. Then you can do it by aftermarket parts. If you're a business that's got, you know, like big durable goods, but then you have an aftermarket parts business. If you have good data in your system, you can do it by market segments,
yep.
Right? You can do it by customers. You can do it by your distributors, by your channel partners or independent reps. You know, who's doing really well and who's not. That's a part of sales management.
That's where it gets uncomfortable, right? But yeah, you got to do it.
Could. And then geography. If you're a global, actually, not only global, but just by the states in the U.S., right? I want to see how my penetration is based on that view with current transaction by geography, by territory, by every state, right, of the country. So again, it's such an easy, simple tool. And it's we get into businesses and we get so busy and we, you know, we just don't take time to do it. But I promise that, you know, if those listening in just can take a few minutes and get the data download, right, the mass download, and get those variables in there. And then there's cool things that you can do that, you know, I've had a lot of success with. There's a simple free tool out there called MapChart. You can Google it. And when you run these things and you get your outputs, you can go in and plot it on a US map or a global map. And then you can use visualization to really convey right to your team or to the executive management team these new insights. And it's pretty game changing lots of times, and especially mid-market. But I've seen it also in Fortune 500 companies where even there, they're not doing it today. And that it just uncovers a lot of very interesting insights.
I like what you said. I want to drill down on it for a moment, Randy, about, you know, strategic hypotheses, because I think, you know, our audience is, you know, very well represented by market and competitive intelligence professionals.
Sure.
And, you know, maybe not all the time, but too often, you know, they get approached by a CMO or a CSO and they say, hey, get me everything you can on X competitor or, you know, this mm-hmm. technology or market segment, what have you. And, you know, that's, you just get a book report and it's kind of, you know, crap in and crap out. And so maybe talk a little bit more about strategic hypotheses, because it's, you know, something that you know, intuitively feels right, but a lot of companies stumble with it. So, you know, you have this data, you know, what are some of the questions you think, you know, how would you approach like a GMM, and what are some of the hypotheses you might formulate?
So think about this when, you know, I use our process for growth strategy development. And it's three gears. It's the growth gears. It's insights, strategy, and execution. And up on that insights gear, which is the very first one up on the upstream strategic piece of the process, right? There are three critical points that we look at there to be able to really effectively formulate strategic hypotheses. So one is looking at your competition. And you have to, and that is an external, absolutely external view, right, of the market and what's going on. The other one is the market segments served. So because different market segments generate different levels of profitability and growth and have different levels of potential and all that kind of stuff, right? So that's the market piece of it. And every one of those markets has a bunch of customers in them. That's what make them up, right? So, and those customers are small, medium, and real large customers, right? So you look at the market and both market and customer, well, market for sure is fully external. Customer, you have a lot of customers you do business with and you have many that you don't. So, right, there's a mix there of external and internal. There's actually a mix of market also, because you're doing, if you've got a good database and have segmentation in your database, you can also see how you're performing with your internal transaction data in markets, right? Yep, so exactly. You got crossover there too. And then we go to company, which is completely internal, all transaction analysis. So, you know, my answer there is I think, and where I've had the best success is doing what I just said. It's looking at all of those in combination, then starting to kind of triangulate it, right? So competitors usually the toughest, but you know, we've had other, you and I've had other, you know, podcasts and events where we've spoken about the importance for the marketing team to collaborate with the sales team and channel partners and things like that, right? So that's a critical component in getting external market stuff. There's sometimes there's reports. I've found lots of times there's not. So you've got to go out in the market, do that competitive kind of, you know, intel assessment. The same thing with market and customers in there, kind of what's our directional market share. And the neat thing is when you combine that external with what we're talking here about internal, the internal transaction analysis, when you come back around customers and markets and products and geographies and all those things we talked about, it creates a whole bunch of hypothetical questions, right? Well, like we were saying before, why are we growing so high here? And do we have low market share there? And there's there a bunch more white space to go get? Why are we doing so poorly here and our margins are so thin? Is it because there's really strong competition there, right? See, it all like is interwoven, right? So exactly. I just find when you take an approach that is both internal and external in a parallel path, you're going to just really get great insights that start to formulate, which then start to filter into strategic it can be a pretty lengthy strategic hypothesis list many times.
Which is great, because I love what you're talking about here, because I think a lot of folks might hear, you know, mining your internal transactional data and they think, oh, great, you know, this is, you know, basically going to look at like sales excellence and, you know, account penetration and all that. But I really like how you're connecting that to the, you know, the broader strategic opportunities that you can have, you know, some of which might be sales execution, some might be marketing, you know, could even be innovation. So,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And there's another really important tool, and I love to tell this story. So early in my career, you know, I moved to the Pittsburgh area with Kennametal, and we had a big, so I learned a lot there because we served a really diverse group of end markets, you know, automotive, aerospace, heavy equipment in the construction arena, mining, general engineering, machine shops. So it was real broad and diversified, right? So a lot of end markets served, and also a huge product portfolio. If I remember right, it was like 120,000 SKUs or something like that, right?
Wow.
With a lot of product family, I mean, way less product families, but sure, that make up all those SKUs, right? But so you can imagine a lot of product families, a lot of SKUs, and a lot of end markets served, and a lot of customers, right? So I don't know how it came to be. I worked with a team where we did the work with Heinz Stadium, and I don't know, just for some time we had customers in, we were talking, and I got to thinking, you know, that this is really kind of a ketchup and mustard is what I've called it since. And
okay.
People say, what the heck are you talking about? Well, think about this. So if you think about, and you know, I'm talking about Heinz now because right, they were in the Pittsburgh area when I was young in my career there. So Heinz owns a dominant share of the global ketchup market. And in the US, it's even higher, right? If you look at the mustard piece of their business, it's way less. I mean, it's like a difference between 40 or 50% ketchup in the US and like less than 10% in mustard, right? But if you look at the served addressable market, and I'm going to link this back to what we do every day, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm oversimplifying it a little bit, but you know, hot dogs, hamburgers, cheeseburger, right? I mean, the ketchup and the mustard usually goes on the same kind of served addressable market, right? Sure. So what that stimulated for me, the idea early in my career was, in the context of a cutting tool company, was, well, I knew we had really strong share, like above 35% in turning products in a certain product line. Mm-hmm. But we had milling and drilling and work holding, and we had other products in the portfolio that were way, way less than, you know, 25 or 30%. So it started stimulating for me the idea, well, where are all the current customers we have that are buying ketchup or our core product? And every customer has a core product in their, or more in their portfolio. Who are all those customers that are buying that product, but they're not buying the other products that I sell?
Right.
And so what that stimulated us to do was to build a whole campaign around first identifying all the customers through transaction analysis that we're buying this, but we're not buying those other pieces of the product family.
Yeah.
And then putting target marketing and sales programs together to actually deliver the messaging and the content, right? The execution mm-hmm. of that product introduction to those customers where we knew we had a lot of white space.
Yeah.
Isn't that simple?
I mean, it sounds simple, but you know, when you have 120,000, frankly, even if you had 10 products, it's, you know, simpler than it ever is. So, yeah. So yeah, what was the result?
Yeah, so we developed a, we called it the Extra Magazine. So it was a campaign where we target, first of all, we put all these products featured, you know, in a structured way, you know, in that program. And guess who got it? Only the customers. And at that time, there was way less digital. So we were using target marketing, you know, through outbound mailing kind of processes. But all those customers that we knew were really great turning customers, they got the milling product messaging with offers and special kind of incentives. And we coordinated that with the sales organization to go out and call the accounts. It was a huge success. It was audited by one of the big consulting firms, you know, accounting firms in the country at the time. And over a year, it generated several million dollars in new business.
That's great.
In white space. And imagine, that was without any prospecting of new accounts. That was all going after existing. It was a global campaign, but going after existing customers that were underserved in certain product families.
Yeah.
I'm serious. Lots of customers can do that. And again, there's other dimensions of it as well. Like we talked about margin, sales margin grid, right? By the different dimensions, same thing for buying and not buying. You can do buying these products, not buying these other products, or this market segment buying that kind of product, but mm-hmm. these market segments that should be buying that same product, not buying it. Same with customers, with channel partners, with salespeople, with geographies. It's the same thing. So when you bring all those sub dimensions in for each of the, we've only spoken about three things: RFM, the growth margin grid, and buying, not buying, right? But then yep. you do it in these dimensions below there, and suddenly you have just a massive amount of intelligence for new business growth opportunity.
Well, I love that because it really, you know, really take, you know, causes you to consider your go-to-market approach, right? You know, so you have these products already. It's like, go back to the Ansoff matrix, right? You know, you have these products, you have these customers. It's just, they haven't connected. I will say I was in Costco the other day and I saw, it was ketchup, Heinz ketchup and mustard package.
You know,
like they were connected up top. So maybe you inspired them with this.
There you go. Exactly. Right.
That's great. So you talked, Randy, about, you know, kind of triangulating, right? You know, different
yeah.
types of data. And I think that was great. So, you know, so you've been in corporations of, you know, various industries and sizes your career. I mean, you know how the reality is, right? You have silos, you have different departments, and, you know, sometimes maybe your MarCom people are great, but they don't have the strategic chops. You know, maybe strategy VPs don't think about, you know, hey, let's look at our transactional data. So, you know, just, you know, getting practical, like who does this? Who should do this?
Yeah. So I think it comes back to, I mean, there's great organizations, obviously can, like Skip, right? Who's doing great things with customers on completely just getting, you know, the folks who follow Skip to understand the importance, right, of understanding markets and customers and competitors to formulate growth strategy that works. And I think, you know, in my opinion, that starts with marketing executive leadership and the executive team understanding the value that it brings. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, driving that through the organization, either the P&L leaders or the product management leaders, where it's just a standard, you know, operating procedure that when we're talking in strategic planning meetings or when we're talking about marketing and sales process, right, and growth, which we're all interested, right, in profitable growth, it all starts with getting the insights as close to, you know, never perfect, but just as good as we can feel with them, so that the hypotheses are pretty, you know, solid. That then flows into the strategy, the 3-year strat plan, so that you're aligning everything in the company through to execution, through funding, through resourcing, you know, in alignment with all that insight and assessment work. I mean, I'm a real disciple of it. I think it all starts there, and it's just, you have to make a commitment, but you also, we need, and that's part of what we're doing, what we continue to do, is just really acclimate, right, especially up and coming young professionals about the tools and processes and techniques, right, mm-hmm. that are available to be successful in what we're talking about here.
No, I love that. I mean, I think it's a you know, powerful point that if you don't make things like this a process, right, you know, not just, you know, the strategy process itself, which is, you know, kind of big and hard to wrap your heads around, but if you don't, right, you know, if you don't have discipline around this, it's just in the crazy whirlwind of life, it's not going to get done.
Exactly.
So maybe one last question I want to ask you, Randy, is, you know, coming from the C-suite perspective, which, you know, you've, you know, had an incredible career, you know, CMO, P&L leader, you know, kind of list the roles. You've worked with a lot of insights professionals. So, you know, don't want to name and shame here, but, you know, where have you been really well supported by the insights team? And, you know, what are some things maybe that have maybe not been so successful? So, you know, what are some things to do and not to do for our listeners today?
I think that, and I'm just off the cuff because, you know, we don't do this in advance. So, but what I'm thinking immediately is just emotional versus, you know, fact-based, or as much data and fact-based as possible, right? And that's part of why we're talking today, is to try to give, you know, those listening in some ideas on how they can be even more accurately insightful and deliver even more value. So you know, I always struggled a little bit when it was just emotional with no kind of fact-based, right, analytics behind it. So it's what I love about the internal one, because it is 100% fact-based off of your, it's a huge secret that we're sharing. And if, you know, if teams just do it, they'll be able to really impress, and it will give true insights into what's going on in the business. So that was one of the things, right, is just be, demonstrate the kind of the thought around and the use of facts and analytics, right, to substantiate what it is that you're talking about. And it can't really be debated, right, when you do that. So that's kind of the internal piece of it. On the external side, I would say it's for sure the tougher of the two, the external versus the internal. It's why I always parallel path it. But I typically get the internal one done, you know, first, and you can actually have some quick hits and successes and start sharing that. So I think that's a little trick. And then in parallel, it gets back to what we spoke about before. I can't tell you how many times in businesses I've been in where, you know, we've got, and I'll pick on marketing a little bit because I've spent most of my career there, right? Where, you know, we're getting the pitch and the input and assessment and stuff. And we say, okay, well, what'd the sales team, what'd the sales leadership say about this? You know, how do they feel? And there's kind of a deer in the headlights.
Yeah, right. Don't ask.
And we so often don't do a good job of collaborating with our sales leaders. And they're a treasure trove of intel in the market. They're there every day, right? Yeah. So that's one of my pet peeves, and it's a simple one to fix. And I think it gets back to leadership again, where, you know, the sales and the marketing executive have to really be coaching, you know, and mentoring, and always encouraging the sales and marketing team to be collaborating. Always ask yourself both ways, right? Is the marketing team talking to the sales and vice versa, right? And again, it'll deliver huge value. And that's what I loved to hear when, you know, if I had someone we were working with that, you know, would articulate that proactively, right? Without us asking that, you know, I've already spoken to so-and-so in, you know, this region of the world, and here's what's happening. And we've bumped that up against our internal. It's just really impressive. It's just a different level of discussion that happens.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great reminder that even in, you know, the age of big data with all caps and teraflops or whatever it is, you know, it's ultimately, you know, we still, you know, strategy still has to be a dialogue. I think as you said really well, you know, it's not, we don't throw a bunch of stuff into some amazing calculator that comes out with our strategy. Exactly. So it's, I like you're bringing the human element in here at the end, Randy.
Absolutely.
Randy Brown, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate the fantastic perspective. RFM, yeah. GMM, and ketchup mustard. So awesome. We look forward to sharing that and maybe some quick visuals with our audience. Thanks so much for joining us, Randy.
Great to be here. Thanks, Cam.
Interested in continuing the conversation? Skip and Telecon is where leaders come together to learn CI best practices and connect with a trusted community of peers. Hear from great organizations like HubSpot, Prudential, Hershey's, and Abbott Labs, and get Skip certified at one of our highly rated workshops. Visit skip.org to learn more and reserve your seat for IntelliCon today.